This hour is being brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
You guys haven't had that late comeback in the final innings yet this season. How would you like to see the team kind of approach, and what can you do to maybe break through in the final innings in general?
There's no magic potion, I'm telling you. I mean, it's just baseball. Those things will happen. That's not a lack of wanting to and things like that. If you think that's the case, I don't know if you know the game. It's just that's part of the game.
Ooh. Terry Francona, Reds manager, doing the old questioning a reporter. I don't know if you know the game. I wasn't expecting that from nice guy Terry Francona. Oh, my. As we welcome you back into the Rahimi and Harris show, it is Mark Grody and Dan Wiederer in for those two who will return, I believe, on Tuesday. And I get to occasionally join those guys as well. So shout out to Layla. Shout out to Marshall. Layla did an unbelievably great job last night with the Chicago Sky. So we're giving her a little bit of rest today. And Dan and I are taking care of things here today. The Cubs play Terry Francona's Cincinnati Reds today. It is a 5:40 game right here on the Score. Really good pitching matchup. Matthew Boyd against the very good Hunter Green, who's just actually returning from a groin injury. So that is the mound matchup today. But there is plenty to talk about in Cincinnati, not just the Reds. And we will talk about the Reds. But there is a certain player for Cincinnati that is not happy that would probably make a lot of other teams happy too. And that is Trey Hendrickson, who plays for the Cincinnati Bengals. So let us, without further ado, bring in Mo Egger, who is an afternoon host on ESPN 1530 in Cincinnati. He joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Thank you so much for joining us, Mo. What's going on, man?
Just spending a beautiful Friday afternoon in Cincinnati traffic. It's great.
Oh, in the natty. Well, guess what? Guess what, Mo? We probably spend a lot more time in traffic than you do. Don't come at us with traffic complaints, Mo.
But that's why it's frustrating, because we typically don't have traffic, yeah. Right? I go to Chicago. I'm coming up next weekend. I expect to sit in traffic. When I leave my house on the west side of Cincinnati for my 18-minute drive to work, I don't expect it to take an hour and a half, but here we are.
Leave early. That is the best thing I can say if you live in the great, big, beautiful city of Chicago. And I do love Cincinnati as well. When last, Mo, I saw the Cincinnati Reds playing a full ball game, they were here in Tower. Well, maybe it was at the Reds. I don't even remember now. But it was a game against the Chicago White Sox. And in that game, Elly De La Cruz hit a game-tying home run. And then it was Miguel Vargas hitting a three-run homer, and the Reds lost by a final score of 5-1. Was that not necessarily the dramatic nature of that loss, but the lack of run support until the very end of that game, was that somewhat symbolic of what's been going on with the Cincinnati Reds this year?
Yeah, I think if there was a game that sort of encapsulates what this season has been like for the Reds, it was that one, because that night the starting pitching was really, really good. The bats were non-existent. Obviously, Elly hit the home run, which forced extra innings, but I think what this season has been for the first 51 games has been confirmation of what we suspected. I think we suspected coming into the season the Reds were going to have really good starting pitching. You were just talking about Hunter Green, obviously did spend some time on the injured list, but for the most part he has been terrific. Heading a rotation, the top to bottom, for the most part has been really good. The bullpen, for the most part, has been really good. The offense has been, I think, to a degree, even slightly worse than we expected. We didn't expect it to be a great offense, but, you know, you mentioned Elly De La Cruz. Elly is not having a terrible season, but he's not having a great one either. And I think this team was built around him being great. I think they were built around Matt McClain being as good as he was 2 years ago. That hasn't happened at all. And I think it was built around Tyler Stevenson, their catcher, who I thought coming into the season had a chance to maybe be a National League All-Star. Mm. He spent some time on the injured list. When he came back, he started to not hit. He has lots of company there. This team offensively has all sorts of issues. They have played 51 games, and in 15 of them, they have scored either 0 runs or 1 run.
Mo, you mentioned Hunter Green, and he'll get the start tonight. How would you describe what his magic is and what he's done to kind of spearhead that rotation?
You know, to put it simply, it's kind of cliche. I think he's learned to pitch, right? We are all familiar with Hunter Green, you know, the kid who was on the cover of Sports Illustrated when he was in high school, the blazing fastball, the ability to hit triple digits, all that is well and good. He wasn't really going to make a name for himself as a high-end, top-of-the-rotation, all-star caliber big league pitcher until he developed other pitches and then until he trusted himself to throw them at any point in the count. And so that evolution has been fun to watch. You know, Hunter got here in 2022, which was a miserable season for the Reds, and we saw flashes. You know, he threw an eight-inning no-hitter against the Pittsburgh Pirates, but at some point he was going to have to start developing secondary stuff. And once he did, he was going to have to start showing a willingness to throw pretty much any pitch at any point in the count to any hitter and use the blazing fastball, use triple digits when necessary. That has happened. He is a complete, well-rounded pitcher with a good arsenal. He'll throw anything at any point in the count. He doesn't screw around up there and fall behind. I think earlier in his career, he would always have that one inning, right, where he'd be cruising along for the first two or three and then suddenly have a 35-pitch inning, and he was knocked out well before you would expect your staff ace to be knocked out. Now, heck, he nearly threw a complete game against the San Francisco Giants, and you never see those. He's become more pitch efficient. He's trusting all of his pitches. He was an all-star last year, and he has continued that pace this season.
Yeah, he's act 4-2 with a 2.36 ERA, and indeed, just a short stint on the DL or the injured list, coming back from that groin injury that was May 7th. So he probably will still be in pretty good condition. Didn't take a lot for him to get it back on here. Matthew Boyd against Hunter Green. Let's get back to Terry Francona. I probably should have asked you about that bite that he had right out of there, man. He's like get a little testy Terry right there. What's going on with that? How has he been taken here? Because, you know, Terry Francona is about as credible as it gets of a manager in Major League Baseball now and maybe all time, really.
Yeah, you know, we played that cut a lot on our show yesterday.
Bet
the guy who asked the question is a dude by the name of Charlie Goldsmith. And frankly, I don't think Terry Francona was coming after Charlie. I think Terry was sort of coming after the idea that, well, it's a matter of want to when it comes to their inability to mount comebacks late in games. But, you know, he's just kind of been there. He's certainly affable. The people who cover the team will talk about how accommodating he is. You know, a lot has been written about, you know, Tito bringing a level of accountability to the team that I think was lacking last season. And I think that's been somewhat evident. But, you know, the reality is this team still has to win in the margins because they lack firepower offensively. Last year's team frustrated a lot of us because they weren't good in the field and they weren't good on the bases. They didn't do the little things very well. We saw a recurrence of issues that ultimately got last year's manager fired. I don't think those things have been extinguished. I think when the Reds have been at their most frustrating, you're still seeing, you know, defensive miscues that don't necessarily show up in the box score, right? Like a ball being cut off that shouldn't be cut off, or the Reds giving up an extra base. And base running, I guess recently it's been a little bit better, but it still hasn't been as good as it needs to be. The other day in Pittsburgh, Spencer Steer was thrown out by a mile trying to score on a ball to left field. The sort of things we often saw last year seemingly haven't really been corrected, and I think that would be the biggest criticism of Terry Francona to this point.
Does Charlie Goldsmith know baseball? Does he know baseball?
Charlie Goldsmith might know more about baseball than anybody in this city not named Terry Francona.
Shout out to Charlie Goldsmith, then.
Mo, through the lens of what you just talked about, obviously Reds get on a little surge. They have the weekend sweep of the Guardians last week, go to Pittsburgh, win the first one, and then you end up losing a series in Pittsburgh where you only give up five runs. What does this weekend mean in terms of a measuring stick series against a team that's playing really good baseball right now?
Well, you know, you could talk about measuring stick, but you could also talk about like where they are in relation to the Cubs. They're going to play them six times over the next 9 days. They have a 5.5-game deficit. If you're serious about winning the division, close that gap and do it by beating the team that leads the National League Central. I don't think it's so much about the measuring stick. I think it's just more about when you're 25 and 26 and you've told the world you think you can contend, okay, that's got to start at some point. no better team to have it start against than the Chicago Cubs. But you're right. You know, you referenced the Pirates series this week. I'm sure many of your listeners saw the White Sox series last week. They're 1-2 against the Miami Marlins. They're 1-2 against the Chicago White Sox. They lost 2 out of 3 this week to the Pittsburgh Pirates. This team has to clean up against the dregs of the league. They haven't done that. So what does that do? It puts added importance on being the teams that, you know, are better than you. And I think top to bottom, a fair assessment would conclude that the Chicago Cubs are better than the Cincinnati Reds. And so I think a lot of us were hoping they would go to Pittsburgh, win 2 out of 3, come in with a measure of momentum instead of needing to win this series. Now they kind of have to if they're going to be taken seriously in the National League Central, because if you just lose 2 out of 3, you come out of Memorial Day 6.5 back. And with teams between yourself and first place, that's not where you want to be.
Wasn't it in Pittsburgh where Ellie De La Cruz hit that absolute bomb? Am I right about that? Like about a 450-footer?
This week?
No, it was like earlier this year. It was earlier this year.
Earlier this year. It was against Pittsburgh, yes. Yeah. He hit one. If anybody has ever been to a Great American Ballpark, there's this big riverboat up high in dead center field.
Yeah, that might have been it, yeah.
And Ellie hit it. And that edifice has been up since, I think, 2007 or 2008. I don't think anybody had ever hit it before.
Yeah.
When he gets a hold of one, they are these majestic punts that wow you. The problem is we don't see them nearly often enough.
We are talking to Mo Egger of ESPN 1530 in Cincinnati. He is their afternoon host. This segment being brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. It is the Rahimi and Harris Show featuring Mark Grody and Dan Wiederer today. We get to be with you here until 2 o'clock. I got one more quick Reds thing. It's actually a trivia question that I have for you, Mo, and then we got to talk about the Cincinnati Bengals. Okay, ready? I'm putting you on the spot here, man. Yeah. This is tough because it goes back a little bit. But in the name of the Chicago Cubs and Wrigley Field, I don't know if you heard this or not, but the Cubs are hosting, or reportedly hosting, per our Bruce Levine, the All-Star Game in the year 2027. It has been since 1990 that Wrigley Field hosted an All-Star Game. Can you, Mo Egger, name the two Reds starters for the National League in that game? I have no idea how old you are, so I might be asking somebody too young to answer these questions, but do you remember who the two starters for the Reds were in the All-Star Game in the year 1990?
Dude, come on. I was 13 years old in 1990.
Wheelhouse stuff here.
What I remember was there was a rain delay, right?
Yes, there was.
Rain delay. It was Wrigley Field at night, right? Uh-huh. So for the 1990 World Series champion, Cincinnati Reds, Jack Armstrong from Neptune, New Jersey, started. And what was amazing about that was he started the All-Star game, and then by the time October rolled around, he wasn't even in the starting rotation. And Chris Sabo also started that game. And what drove me nuts I was soon to turn 13-year-old kid that year, Ozzie Smith started at shortstop for the National League, which was total BS.
Barry Larkin.
It should have been Barry Larkin.
Yes, you're right.
The voters were stupid. Uh-huh. Those stupid voters also put in Lenny Dykstra and not Eric Davis.
Nails.
So there should have been 4 Reds who started that game for the National League at Wrigley Field. They got 2 hit and lost 2-0 because the people who voted for the starters screwed up.
Oh, man. That is good stuff.
Hazy memory from Mo on the 1990 All-Star game.
By the way, I'll throw this out there. There's one other little tidbit here. I was going to use this later, but why not now? There was the rain delay in the 7th inning, and check this out, guys. They didn't just keep the broadcast there. They played the program Rescue 911.
Oh, boy.
That was something.
Wow.
Yeah, instead of doing
William Shatner.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Bill Shatner, man. That was the beginning of his comeback. All right, we have to get into the Cincinnati Bengals and what the latest is going on right now with Trey Hendrickson and where he is and if he's going to be with the Bengals and if Bengals fans want him to be with the Bengals or they want him to trade him. Tell us everything.
Well, I think the way most reasonable people look at it is that neither side is necessarily wrong in terms of their just general stance. Trey Hendrickson led the league in sacks last year, was a defensive player of the year finalist, and was the only good player on an otherwise terrible defense. So he wants to be the highest paid edge rusher in the league, or at least one of the few highest paid edge rushers in the league. I can't blame him. And the Cincinnati Bengals look at Trey Hendrickson, who's under contract for this season. He's going to turn 31 by the end of this year.
Yep.
And they look at him and go, there's a pretty good chance his best years are behind him. And I don't think that stance is necessarily wrong. So, look, number one, the Bengals have offered him a raise and a contract extension. And if you believe the reporting that's out there, and I do, the raise would basically be a 75% raise from about $16 million to $28 million. That's pretty good. Mm-hmm. That's not good enough for Trey Hendrickson. So is there going to be, you know, if you go back to the owners' meetings, Katie Blackburn, who is essentially the owner of the Bengals, said, in so many words, Trey Hendrickson's just going to have to be happy with what we have offered, which tells me there's our offer. We're digging in. And if you know anything about the history of the Cincinnati Bengals, once they say they're done negotiating, they're done negotiating. So I think the next question becomes, number one, does Trey Hendrickson become a distraction this during training camp? Because I don't know if you guys saw the video last week of Trey coming to the voluntary off-season workout, standing there while his teammates are practicing, and he's grandstanding to the media. Do we see more spectacles like that? And then number two, does he decide to miss football games? Does he decide to extend a holdout into the regular season, and do the Bengals miss him? Or did the Bengals go, okay, we're going to have to figure out a way to get this done? I think anybody who tells you they know how this is going to end is lying. Trey Hendrickson is a different type of guy. That doesn't mean he's a bad guy, but I think this can go in any number of directions. But, you know, again, I don't think either side is necessarily incorrect. And by the way, number one, Trey Hendrickson signed a one-year contract extension for this coming season 2 years ago. He shouldn't have done that. Number two, what we're never going to know is, what would the Bengals be doing with Trey Hendrickson if they didn't reverse course and sign T. Higgins to the deal that they weren't going to give him until Joe Burrow made them?
That's where I was going to go next, Mo, because part of the reason that money is tight in Cincinnati is because you're paying a big-time quarterback money. You've got a wide receiver, one that has earned the contract that Jamar Chase has gotten, and T. Higgins comes back on that deal. Given those dynamics, how do you describe the window that the Bengals must attack now that they have those three pieces all together and united on big, big deals?
I think it has to happen in the next 3 years. Look, I think there have only been five quarterbacks who have won their first ever Super Bowl after they've played 8 years. And so, you know, let's be honest about that. If we're sitting here having this conversation 2 years from now about the Bengals with Joe Burrow putting up a bunch of gaudy numbers and having not won the title, I think we're going to be having discussions about what happens if they still don't win a title after that third year, if that makes sense, and I'm not sure it does. The window is open. I think the question is, you know, it was a huge organizational failure last year. Joe Burrow was an MVP finalist on a team that didn't make the postseason. They wasted greatness from their quarterback. Have they fixed their defense and offensive line this offseason enough to ensure that that doesn't happen again? That's a matter of debate. But, I think there's a lot of urgency. And by the way, I think after having retooled a lot of the coaching staff, now the arrow is pointing at head coach Zach Taylor. If we're having a conversation in late January and the Bengals haven't even made the postseason or are one and done, I think it's going to be interesting to hear what we're saying about Zach Taylor.
Yeah. They were 9-8 last year. The Bears will be visiting the Bengals. Week 8, is that?
November 2nd.
Yeah, the Bears.
November 2nd.
Yeah. Bears at the bank. For some reason, I don't know why, because we're all out of our minds. I think I picked the Bears to win that game. I don't know if they're actually going to win that game, though, Dan.
Can I just ask a brief question as a beat writer traveling to Cincinnati for that game? Where should I go that weekend? What's my must-hit spot?
Montgomery Inn. Am I right about that, Mo, or no?
You're not going to get any argument from me as it relates to the Montgomery Inn. I think you have to go to the one in Montgomery, not the one downtown.
Oh, okay.
I think the original is the place to be, so you're going to have to drive to the burbs just a little bit. It sort of depends on what you're into. The area between the stadiums is really cool. Every Cincinnatian is going to tell you got to try Skyline Chili, which I think is awesome. The big steakhouse in town is Jeff Ruby's Steakhouse, which you know, pretty much anybody who's anybody who comes to town goes and visits. There's no shortage. And if you're a beer guy, we got a billion breweries here. So there's no shortage of beer, if that's your thing, too.
In.
Yeah, there you go. All right, now the very last question here, and then we do got to go. your favorite Reds player of all time is?
It's Barry Larkin.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, so I'll give you the top five.
Oh, good.
Right? My five all-time favorite Reds players are Barry Larkin.
Uh-huh.
Dave Parker, who goes into the Hall of Fame this summer, well overdue, the Cobra.
I love the Cobra.
Eric Davis.
Amazing player.
Johnny Cueto, terrific pitcher.
Love Cueto. He was here for a little while.
Yeah, and the great Joey Votto.
Oh, that's a pretty good list right there, man. None of the big red machine, huh? Maybe that's out of your wheelhouse.
No Mario Soto.
I was born in 77. So,
yeah, I got you.
I got opinions about all those guys.
But Rob Dibble.
I like Rob Dibble a lot, too.
Who doesn't like? Mo, this has been great, man. Like, we could definitely talk to you longer, but the show dictates that we move on because we got to talk more Bears here, man. So I appreciate you.
My condolences. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Mo.
That's Mo Egger from ESPN 1530 in Cincinnati.